everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush, Mini Crush a Dish.
It's Wednesday, though, Chuck. That's weird.
It's Wednesday, and it's not 9 a.m.
Oh, you're right. I'm all thrown. I'm shook.
We're drunk.
Well, drunk on power, maybe. My kid texted me the other day that she was shook. I'm like, where do you get this slang?
Really?
9-year-old? Yeah, she was shook. I know I was. It was because I saw one of the guys from Stranger Things, which she loves, at my neighborhood bar, and I texted her, and she was like, I am shook.
They grow up so fast.
It's weird.
You know? How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I got dumped, Chuck.
What?
Yeah, man. So I need to crush out to mitigate my sorrow.
You no longer?
No longer.
Oh, man.
I know, man. What a bummer way to start the show. I just wanted to put it out there in case I start, you know, sobbing in a corner while we record this episode.
Jeez, I feel like we should talk off mic.
Oh, yeah, we could totally do that.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay, man. It happens.
What a real moment.
It's a very real moment in Mini Crush history.
Oh, geez. Well, you can move in with us.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Actually, you didn't get kicked out of your house.
So. No. We weren't married, Chuck. It was a girlfriend situation.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll chat later.
Yeah.
And by the way, Noel, I don't know if you noticed the back of that large Mac monitor is, did you see the cartoon?
No.
Just step around real quick and check it out.
Hang on. Here I go.
For folks of you at home, I'll post a picture of this. But we had the animator, I can't remember his technical director, maybe is his official title, Mike Hollingsworth, of BoJack Horseman. And he had a Sharpie, and I was like, I feel like you should draw something here, and I don't know where. And I was like, well, why don't you draw it on the back of this Mac monitor?
Our IT guy is going to be enraged.
You think he is?
No.
I kind of wondered, because I texted Jerry right after. I was like, if the animator for BoJack Horseman were to have drawn in Sharpie on this Mac monitor, would you be mad? She was like, no, that'd be great.
Yeah, good.
So I immediately sent her the picture.
Jerry's chill. Yeah, what does it say? It says
Caballo Triste, which I think is sick horse.
Okay.
And he drew a little cartoon, so we'll post it on the social media.
That's a good call. I think it's a, you know, these Macs, they're so clean and austere.
Yeah.
Need fuck them up, man. Go to town.
That's memorabilia.
Absolutely.
Now.
That should be the new thing. Movie Crush guests should sign the Mac.
Oh, wow.
I'm
Should we do that?
I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Why not? Okay. So this week, everybody, we are going to do a couple of actually, nothing super different this week. That's coming next week.
Oh, boy.
But we're going to go ahead and start off with Hollywood history.
Hollywood history.
And today I'm going to briefly cover the death of John Belushi.
It's going to be sad, Chuck.
It is going to be sad.
It's going to be triggering.
Well, it depends on how much you like John Belushi.
Well, trigger warning, if you like John Belushi, it might be sad.
Spoiler, he died. And by 1982, it was well established that John Belushi had some problems in his life.
Yeah.
Some addiction problems.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of drug use, alcohol, a larger-than-life man and actor and comedian, and like so many, had large appetites for all things. And, you know, John was well known to do a lot of cocaine. And by this point in his life, he was tempering that cocaine with pills some and heroin some.
Eww.
Just a bad way.
So real cocktail there.
So on March 4th, 1982, Mr. Belushi and a woman named Kathy Smith, who she was sort of a part-time singer and part-time groupie and part-time drug dealer. She was known in her early years for hanging out with the band. One of my favorite groups of all time, and reportedly had a band baby, paternity unclear. But some member of the band, either Levon Helm or Robbie Robertson or Rick Danko or Garth Hudson or Richard Manuel, impregnated her.
Oh, okay.
And she was just known – that was the baby was known as the band baby because they didn't know who.
Jeez.
So anyway, she hung out with the band a lot. Her name was Kathy Smith, and she was well known to sort of deal – with high-profile musicians and cocaine. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean it was a golden time for cocaine.
It was a golden time. It was before they knew it was bad for you.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true.
No, but I think it was just wide rife in the acting scene and bands. You know, people would use it because it helped them work long hours and crazy grindy sure. schedules and, you know, touring and stuff. I mean, it makes sense, but it's, you know, it yeah. takes a toll.
Well, you hear the old stories about crew members on movie sets in the 70s being paid overtime in cocaine. They would just be like, guys, we need a couple more hours out of you. Here you go. Yeah. And everybody be like, sweet, let's do it.
Okay.
So she was out partying with John Belushi and a writer from Saturday Night Live named Nelson Lyon. And they were, you know, drinking lots of booze. They were snorting lots of cocaine. They went out in West Hollywood to the Roxy, the very famous club. There was a sort of a secret nightclub above the Roxy called the Rocks, which is where they went. After that, they went to the Rainbow Room, had some dinner. Apparently, Belushi just had a little bit of soup because I don't think you are probably super hungry after getting drunk and doing tons of blow. And he said he wasn't feeling good, so he wanted to go back to his hotel room at the Chateau Marmont, to the infamous Bungalow 3, which I have hung out and partied in several times, which I'll get to in a minute.
Oh, man, cool.
So Smith was there, and Belushi asked her to shoot him up with a speedball, which is a often deadly combination of cocaine and heroin in a needle. Not something you ever want to try, folks.
That sounds terrifying.
I imagine it is. And she said, and this came out later in court testimony because she was eventually would be brought up on charges for murder because she injected John Belushi. He asked her to, but she injected him with what she said were 11 different injections of speedball throughout the night, which is just a massive amount of drugs.
Yeah, I can't even. That was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, even for Belushi. So Robin Williams stopped by at one point and hung out at the chateau for a very short time, did a little bit of blow, as Robin Williams was known to do.
Well, there's that stand-up special where he keeps disappearing backstage
yeah.
and is very clearly doing
yeah.
coke.
Sure, sure. Back in the day, he was a well-known party guy. But he said, and these are quotes again, he said that he was creeped out by Kathy Smith and thought she was a, quote, lowlife. So he didn't hang out long. Robert De Niro, who had been sort of trying to catch up with Belushi all night, eventually stopped by at 3 a.m. And apparently it's just by that point was not a good scene inside there. So De Niro didn't stick around long either. And she continued to shoot him up with these speedballs. Eventually she left, put him in the shower, showered him up, put him to bed, and then she got out of there. The next morning, the personal trainer is what they called him. He was – sometimes Belushi had personal trainers that were really bodyguards to try and keep him from doing drugs as assigned by the movie studios. He came in, found Belushi dead in the bungalow in a fetal position on his bed, pillow over his head. And it's pretty gruesome, so if you don't want to hear this next part, you might want to tune out for 10 seconds. His tongue was sticking out, and his body was discolored on the side where all the blood had settled. Mm. So just a really rough scene. Tried to resuscitate him, didn't work, only 33 years old. And Kathy Smith was later brought up on charges and plea bargained down and spent, I believe, 15 months in jail after admitting that she essentially killed John Belushi. Very, very sad.
Yeah, that's really terrible. To end on a slightly funnier note, it's not really funny because this is kind of what
bring led, it up, Noel.
I'm just reading about how the Blues Brothers movie had it was an interview with Dan Aykroyd for Vanity Fair, and apparently the movie had a line item budget for cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the making of, although he wasn't in Caddyshack, the making of Caddyshack, the making of Blues Brothers, there are lots of great articles about just the debauchery that surrounded those productions. Pretty amazing.
R.I.P. Belushi, though, man.
Yeah, man. He was far too young. We lost a great talent. And every year in the summer, I typically get to hang out in that chateau, Bungalow 3, with Hodgman.
Uh-huh.
He rents out that particular suite and or particular bungalow and has people over and we all hang out. And it's pretty interesting. It's sort of like a mid-century modern two-bedroom apartment. It's got these big, you know, you walk in, there's a living room with a fireplace to the left, a sort of medium-sized kitchen to the right, and down the hall you have a couple of bathrooms and a couple of bedrooms. And then off the living room is a big open patio with sliding doors. And first time I went there, I was like, this is where Belushi died, huh? And Hodgman walked me back to the bedroom. He was like, right there. Obviously, different bed.
Have you heard of the band Death Grips?
No.
Well, there was a thread on the Movie Crushers Facebook page where people were like, what music biopic would you most like to see? And I'll have to find the name of the guy who had this conversation with, but he said the band Death Grips. And the reason is they're sort of this weird kind of artsy hip-hop group, two people, but they're known for just like these crazy shenanigans. So they basically like took all their record label advance for this record, lived at the Chateau Marmont for like a month,
oh, wow,
and then leaked the record themselves, huh, before it came out, like as a as a bit of an art kind of fuck you thing.
Really?
And they were known for like scheduling shows and not showing up on purpose, uh-huh, as like sort of a weird
performance,
like, performance art where they would just have a drum set and like no intention of actually showing up and just
really?
A video screen.
Interesting.
So these guys are, and then the main dude, lyricist MC Ride, is an excellent visual artist as well. Really cool story, but total Chateau Marmont. I wonder if it was that particular bungalow that they rented out.
I don't know. Bungalow 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one next door, which is a mirror image of Bungalow 3, and I've been in that one too. But it's a pretty cool scene. If you ever get the chance to hang out at the Chateau Marmont, I highly recommend it.
Well, you should just invite me to this Hodgman throwdown.
It's cool, man, because to get to those bungalows, you know, you can go up through the hotel, and it's really a pretty magical property all the way around, classic L.A. property. But to get in the other way, you go up the back street around the hotel, up through the Hollywood Hills, and each little bungalow has their own little open parking garage, which is nice because parking sucks in LA. And then you enter through a coded gate and sort of walk through just the most lovely rock garden and palm trees and birds of paradise and stuff to arrive at the front door of these bungalows. So there's a little insider scoop. Maybe next year I will take photos and post them because there aren't a ton of them actually of that bungalow. They try to keep it secret. All right, we're going to move on to social studies.
Social studies on Movie Crush.
I threw this one out today. Sometimes Emily and I imagine you too, Noel, get bummed when you hear about a Hollywood couple that is broken up. You know what I mean? I mean, like you. I'm sorry to bring this up.
Bad timing. Yeah, I got bigger fish to fry, Chuck, but I'll play your reindeer games.
So I posed the question, what real-life Hollywood breakup would bum you out the most? And here's what people had to say. Sanchi Ann Glover, Emily Blunt, and John Krasinski. Yeah, for sure. I'm with you there. Peter Middleton, Will Smith, and Jada Pinkett. Samantha Sark says Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively. All right, I'm with you there. Jenna Van Valen. Oh, boy, you almost had the best name ever, Jenna. And she got the most likes and hearts. She said Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard. So I think a lot of people are in that camp. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson says Michelle Benjamin Goldner. For sure. Nobody wants to see Tom Hanks get divorced. You kidding me? It'd be the worst thing ever. Megan Carroll, she's participates a lot in here. Thanks, Megan. She says Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally. For sure.
Oh, I'm behind that one for sure.
Yep. That would be super sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they seem great.
Yeah. Let me see here. Jimmy Mallory, Chris Pratt and Anna Faris really bum me out. But in general, I do not care so much. All right. I hear you. Helen Lyon says, Jamie Lee Curtis and Christopher Guest. Sure, they've been together forever. I would hate to see that as well. Let me see here. Another vote for Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. That's sort of all over the place. I think they're a beloved couple. So Everett Miller chimed in again for that one. Let me see. Jane Longshore was bummed about Amy Poehler and Will Arnett. To be sure, that was pretty disappointing to find out. But here's the deal, folks. You never know what's going on the inside. You know, you don't know what real life is like for these people.
I'm going to assume that it's miserable for all of them.
Boy, a lot of people are going with Dax and Kristen and Hanks and Wilson. So they are clearly beloved couples, and Krasinski and Blunt.
They're just so upbeat, too. Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard just seem like really positive types. You know?
Sure.
You talked to Dax Shepard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was he cool? Was he Paws?
He was Paws.
Nice.
Kathy Jean, boy, I agree with you here. She says Kevin Kline and Phoebe Cates. They've been together for a long, long time, so that would be super sad. A lot of people don't care. How about that? Edwin Forrest Glenn says Ellen and Portia de Rossi.
I was going to say that one too.
Yeah?
Only because Portia gave Ellen a birthday present on the Ellen show, and it was like her own, like a wildlife refuge named after her, like a gorilla research center in the rainforest named after Ellen.
Yeah.
In honor of like Jane Goodall's work.
Or sure.
Who Ellen admired very much. And it was just a really nice moment. A nice thing, like, you know, when you have everything, what kind of birthday present do you give? That was pretty thoughtful.
Ian Bauer says Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman. Are they still together?
Surely. They seem just perfect for each other.
Agreed. Danielle West is still sad over Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. Wow.
She's Wait, like, I'm sorry, what?
Two couples ago.
What? They're not. Are you kidding me?
Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis says a little bit Wolf. I don't know if that's a real name.
A little bit?
Yeah.
That's a nice one, though. That's a nice pseudonym, though, if it is.
Agreed. Don Morris, Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick. I totally agree there. They've been together a long time.
I guess this thing, too, like so many of these Hollywood couples are such flashes in the pan. I think the ones that would bother me the most are the ones that have been together for a really long time, weathering all that Hollywood bullshit.
Absolutely.
I think that's the takeaway here.
Yeah, for sure. Kurt and Goldie, a lot of votes for them. I mean, that would be super disappointing. They never got married, but longtime couple. Fran Staley says Denzel Washington and his wife. Agreed. Oh, here's a good one. Zach Pointer says Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan. For sure. They've been together forever and have been through it all. So that would be really sad. A few votes, even though Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward are no longer with us. Wait, is she still with us?
Joanne Woodward?
Mm-hmm.
I Paul do Newman's not know. Wife. I don't know.
If they had broken up, people said retroactively, then that would have been really, really bad. And I totally agree. They're one of the classic Hollywood couples.
She is still living.
She is? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Jeez, I feel bad now. I should have known that.
No, no. It's they're dropping like flies, man.
Let me see here. One vote for Amy Madigan, and she says Tim Harris, but I believe that's Ed Harris. Bridget Benalicia. Let me do a couple of more. A bunch of Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally's, Alex Doty and Tess Sullivan, Andrea Cruz. Says Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick. A couple of Josh and Chucks in here. That's pretty funny.
Have you heard that there's Josh and Chuck fan fiction out there? Do you know about this?
Oh, is there really?
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
What kind of fan fiction?
Slightly erotic.
Okay. About us too?
Mm-hmm.
Getting it on?
Yeah, you're mainly just being broing out super hard.
All right. I'll have to check that out. Julia Nilsson says Frances McDormand and Joel Cohen. I agree. That would be a bummer. They seem pretty well suited. All right. I think that is about it, everyone. One more vote from Carrie Sullivan, Cloud, John Krasinski, and Emily Blunt. Wow. So it's really like five or six couples that people said over and over.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Noel, we're going to move on to stream this. And then comment card. I figure we'd follow up on the OA since I finished it.
Oh, yeah.
And then mention another thing I just started watching, and maybe we'll start doing a two-part thing.
Yeah, circle back.
So, I finished the OA.
Okay.
Spoilers upcoming, everybody.
Okay, yeah.
It sort of lost me a little bit,
uh-huh.
But not completely.
Okay.
I wasn't like, nah, I'm not going to watch it anymore. I finished it all through. Emily was definitely more into it all the way through than I was.
It definitely felt like they... It kind of had that Lost vibe where it was like, did you kind of decide where you were going with this like halfway through kind of a little bit? Like, I see what you're saying. I felt like the ending was really beautiful where they were with the school and like mm-hmm. saving the kids from the school shooter, right? Isn't that what happened?
Pretty intense ending, yeah.
Yeah. But it was also like that was sort of the one moment where you see a real thing kind of or yeah. like, you know, and then of course the show ends. So to me that was a little bit of like a kind of – I don't know. It left me feeling a little bit
cold,
annoyed, kind of. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's what lost me, and this is I don't know if it's petty or something I should have just been able to get over easier. But honestly, dude, if they hadn't have made the big thing that they all had to do to become one, that stupid interpretive dance.
You didn't like the interpretive dance?
I hated it, man.
That was my favorite part.
Emily loved it. A lot of people love it. I just could not get past
it. They're like making sounds too, right?
Yeah, and then the big one that got me was when they went and like hissed like a cat and did the magic fingers. I don't know, man. I hated that. I was just like, it took me out of it every single time. And I was like, why couldn't they have just made it where they like join hands or something and just something a little less like.
I'm guessing you're not an Alvin Ailey fan.
It's funny that you mentioned that because Emily loves Alvin Ailey. And while we were watching this, I said, this is like Alvin Ailey.
Yeah.
It's modern dance.
It is.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah. It's not really something I gravitate towards, but I enjoyed it. It didn't put me off too badly. I kind of liked it, actually.
All right, no. A lot of people did. Emily loved it. She was very moved. And I was sort of a dick. She was and I didn't realize it. I was being a big dick at the time, but I was doing that thing where I was sort of making fun of it as the show kind of went on. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I was sort of making too much fun of it. And she was like, I'm enjoying this. Will you shut the fuck up, please, and allow me to enjoy it and not make fun of it? And I was like, oh, man, what a jerk.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least you guys are comfortable enough with each other that she can tell you to shut the fuck up.
Oh, of course. Like, I hear that 10 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
She's very comfortable. And it's sort of a, you know, sometimes you both want to be making fun of the same thing. And we just weren't on the same page. So I'm going to watch the season two that I'm sure we're getting a pass on, by the way, Josh and I. We've not heard back from
them. Oh, man. So really?
I mean, when you don't hear back, it's called the soft pass.
Yeah.
You ever heard that term?
Oh, I've been soft passed on many a time, my friend.
I didn't know that was a thing until I got soft passed on the first time. Like 5 or 6 years ago, we auditioned for some Discovery Channel show. And you just never hear back. And I was like, wait a minute. Surely they're going to call us and say, you didn't get it. But no.
Nope.
You just never hear.
It's like professional ghosting.
Professional ghosting.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Noel, we're going to finish up with 5 questions from you to us. This is from Ralph Spradley. What is your favorite movie from childhood, the pre-adolescent part of childhood? I don't know what adolescent means. Is that like 12-ish?
Yeah, I think so. Preteen?
Well, I'm going to go then with the triumvirate. Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and E.T.
It's someone who's in the process of developing from a child into an adult, by the way. That's what the internet says.
What was your favorite childhood movie?
I really liked An American Tale a lot.
Yeah.
With Fievel, you know, somewhere out there and all that. I really liked The Secret of Nim, which I watched with my kid several years ago, and it like got me verklempt as shit because it was very nostalgic. I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, so it kind of brought me back.
You were into mouse movies.
I really liked
mouse cartoons.
Exclusively mouse-centric movies, yes.
Bring on more mouse content, everyone.
Yeah, whatever happened to that, man? We need more good mouse cartoons.
Agreed. Let me see here. Rob Riehl, R-I-E-H-L, Riehl. What order would you suggest someone who is new to Star Wars watch them?
You're definitely going to want to start with the prequels because those are the best ones. Phantom Menace is a masterpiece.
Look at you goading the listeners.
I'm not really.
Boy, I've never really thought about that because, you know, as a loyalist, I just watched them in the order they all came out.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you can legit order them, is there merit to that?
Well, I mean,
for a first timer,
I would say skip the prequels entirely. Just watch the
good ones.
The good ones, which would include some of the newer ones, are fine. The Last Jedi and Force Awakens, I thought were fun. I'm also not a Star Wars head.
Sure,
and our coworker,
not like Harry Potter.
Have you seen the people online unpacking how we feel about Harry Potter?
I love it.
It's a giant thread. We talked about this already, but no, our coworker Holly Fry, who is a Star Wars enthusiast,
yes, she is.
To put it lightly, mm-hmm. She will defend those prequels with her dying breath.
Of course, she does.
And so, you know, if you want to watch them in chronological order, you would have to start with the prequels.
Yeah,
but if you want to not hate Star Wars, I would say watch the good ones.
All right, that's a good answer. If you want to not hate Star Wars, Shannon Lee, which director's filmography do you wish you had done yourself? Do you most wish you had done yourself? Great question, Shannon, and I say it often. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to go right out of the gate with Alexander Payne because I love, love, love Alexander Payne. What about you, Noel?
I'm a huge Charlie Kaufman fan.
Oh,
I just think he's
good pick.
An incredibly fascinating writer and a critic, and when he directs, he does really, really interesting things with it too. I just think he can do no wrong. I think he's a genius.
Yeah, agreed. I even managed to sit through what was the name of that?
Synecdoche, New York.
Yeah.
That movie's incredible.
It is. It's a lot, though.
Oh, it's a lot. But it's like it really warrants repeat viewing because it's got not that it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
But it's a lot, man. It's like encapsulated in that movie is like life and struggle with art and humanity and like getting old.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, he said he wanted to make a horror movie, so he decided to make one about getting old.
Jeez, that's the ultimate horror, I guess. Huh?
Exactly.
Let me see here. Sam Lucian Pawlowski says, are there any movies that make you angry? Make me angry. I guess I've seen movies like movies where injustices occur that make me angry. Those are probably the only movies that make me angry. Like I'm having a hard time like calling one up right now.
I mean, an easy one is like a Schindler's List or something like that, where you're seeing horrible injustices happening to people, you know, who can't defend themselves and stuff like that. My main thing is just anytime you see powerful assholes, you know, crushing people under their boots that have no way to defend themselves, that bothers me.
Yeah,
and if it's done well, if for dramatic effect, then that's great. And it comes around. Usually there's some kind of redemption or some kind of moment where they get their comeuppance. But those are the moments in movies where, like the scene in Schindler's List where the guy's just shooting people off of his balcony with the sniper rifle or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. And here's another thing, too, along those lines is when most movies, usually the person might get their comeuppance because people don't like to see something go unpunished. But the rare movies that are so dark that they do leave that unpunished, those are the most maddening to me and most upsetting. And that happens.
For sure.
All right, final question. Here's a good one. Felicia Trujillo Brian says, let's not forget about our beloved metal members of MovieCast. What is your favorite movie car of all time? Wow. My favorite movie car of all time.
That's so funny. Right as you said that, I was scrolling through the Movie Crushers page, and there's a GIF of the guy from Mad Max Fury Road on the back of that crazy guitar amp truck.
Yeah.
That's an awesome movie car.
That is. And you know what? I will there's a few for me. I will say the Mad Max's car in the original Road Warrior and Mad Max that I don't even know quite what that car is, but they're like the supercharged black, you know, dusty old black hot rod that he's driving. That would be up there for me for sure. Of course, the classic Mustang, Steve McQueen's Mustang from Bullet, has got to be up there. And then you know what? I'm going to go in a different direction, and I will say all of the checker cabs in Royal Tenenbaums, the old junky checker cabs, because it was such a weird thing to do in that movie and such an odd choice to have these old dumpy beat-up cabs that – I don't think it ever really existed in New York City. So those are my cars for now.
Good picks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe the motorcycle from Great Escape.
People like Bullet. Did you say Bullet?
Yeah, the Mustang.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
For sure.
I haven't seen it. Is it good? Should I watch it? Steve McQueen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch anything with Steve McQueen.
And go ahead, Internet. Make fun of me for having so many holes in my movie knowledge. Somebody called me out about that.
Noel, you're clearly depressed.
I'm not depressed, man. I'm fine.
We're going to get you out of this.
I'm having a good time.
All right.
I'm going to go watch Bullet.
All right. That's it for this week, everyone. Your homework, I believe, is it's a crossover, everyone. The Great Friendly Fire podcast. My friends, Adam Pranica, Benjamin Harrison, and John Roderick host a show called Friendly Fire on the Max Fun Network. And they are all three pals of mine, and we got to hang out this June in California. And they do their Friendly Fire podcast is about war movies. And I am such a big fan of their show. A lot of people don't listen to podcasts that their friends do in the industry. I am not one of them. I love the podcasts that my friends do. And so we sat down and did a legit crossover. So Friendly Fire and I talked about Platoon, and It was a long, good, supersized discussion on Platoon that I'm releasing in full. They are also releasing the same content in their feed the same week. So we're doing a real crossover, but theirs is more edited and will be slightly different. So, geez, maybe listen to both of them. See which one you like better. I just throw it all out there, everybody. So watch Platoon. I highly recommend it. Great, great Oliver Stone. Sort of a monumental Vietnam War film from the 1980s. So check it out.
I love Platoon. That was one that really grabbed me early on when I was first starting to get into more challenging movies. You know?
I hear you. All right, everyone. So thanks for joining in. And Noel and I are about to go to a bar and take care of all our troubles.
Boom.
We'll see you next week.